We're talking about standards of care for survivors of sexual assault and the work of ensuring adequate resources are available in rural and urban communities alike. This is a sensitive topic on The Morning Show, so please take care. And thanks for being here. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There were more than 4,000 sex offenses reported to law enforcement during 2020, and that's data collected by the Wisconsin Justice Department, saying that the actual number of sexual assaults is likely higher. Where do you see gaps in care for survivors of sexual assault in your community? What resources made all the difference for you? 800-642-1234. Caitlin Wonderlin is a mobile sexual assault victim advocate at Bolton Refuge House in Eau Claire, providing services in Buffalo, Eau Claire, and Jackson counties. Caitlin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, take us along with your job, mobile sexual assault victim advocate. What does that mean?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a unique position in that I'm mobile. So while I work in Eau Claire, and we have an office in Eau Claire, I also am available for survivors wherever they need to be. So, for example, I spend a lot of time at the Chippewa Valley LGBTQ plus Center because we know that sexual assault can disproportionately affect individuals in that community. For example, I spend time at some of the daytime shelters for individuals who are experiencing a mental health condition or homelessness, just to be there where survivors need someone to be there. I think for so long it's been really hard to access services for a huge population of people, and especially in a rural area, it's really important to have somebody who can travel to where the survivors are and where the resources need to be. So that's a bit of my job.
And so when you are offsite at a shelter or elsewhere, what resources are you providing?
Yeah, so it's a mix of definitely the supportive, being there for somebody, the listening and kind of helping someone process through the trauma of what they've experienced, whether that is a recent trauma, a trauma from the past, or just in knowing in the future how to move on past trauma and work on the healing journey. But also it's, okay, do you need help with this resource that is not part of my job, but I can help to provide information about that resource and find that resource for you? Or maybe you have questions about the legal system. And while I'm not an attorney, I do know from my work in the legal system in Eau Claire how a lot of things go to help some of those fears a survivor might have. For example, some survivors are so afraid of the unknown or having to see the person who's victimized them in something like a courtroom that knowing the setup of the courtroom can help for a lot of people to feel like some of the unknown has been taken away, or to know this is the turn order. This person's going to speak. This person's going to speak. You won't be asked to speak, to look at the person. You won't have to sit close to the person, but we're going to be there and I can sit behind you and I can breathe with you slowly so that we can kind of work through it together. So a lot of different things that really is mostly dictated by the needs of the survivor or needs of the group that I'm talking to. If I'm doing outreach, I'm talking about raising awareness.
And it sounds like there's navigator elements to your work as well, guiding people.
Definitely. I think sexual assault is a really unique and really upsetting crime for many reasons, but especially because for a lot of people, it feels like something that they can't talk about, or something that's taboo, or something that feels shameful. And it's never a survivor's fault, but that's something that is really, really hard to navigate. Absolutely.
Have you developed working relationships with the places that you visit, the sites that are offsite for your organization? Do they get what you're doing in terms of being an active partner for you?
Definitely. I am very, very lucky to work where I work, and especially in a rural area. I think that the sense of community is such an important thing that if you're able to meet somebody over and over and make yourself known and make yourself a resource to other groups and other partners in the area, then the conversation can move forward as a community. So I'm very, very lucky in that a lot of groups really get what we're doing and really appreciate what we're doing at Bolton Refuge House and with survivors of sexual assault.
Talking with Caitlin Wonderlin, who is a mobile sexual assault victim advocate at Bolton Refuge House in Eau Claire and working in the surrounding area, surrounding communities. As we see that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, how does this month affect you? What does it mean to you? Do you live in a rural community? How would you describe access to sexual assault services, domestic violence shelters? 800-642-1234. Caitlin, you probably see this firsthand, but where are the gaps in services and systems in smaller towns and villages in Wisconsin?
That is a great question. I think that it can be really hard because for so long, the idea of who is a survivor of sexual assault has been defined by society of this is definitely a cis female who is young, a stranger who is the perpetrator, and that's just not the case. It's not from statistics. It's not from the stories that I hear. It's just not the case. The truth, and the really upsetting truth, but the one that we all have to know, is that anybody could be a victim and anybody could be a perpetrator. There's no one look for a victim of sexual assault or sexual crimes, and there's no one look for someone who is a perpetrator. There are groups that we know are disproportionately affected. For example, there are statistics that around half of trans adults have experienced sexual assault in their lives. These are incredibly disproportionate, thinking about one population that has been really, really greatly affected by sexual violence. So I think in thinking more about survivors holistically and how we can help as many people as possible, it's also important to reach out to survivors themselves and ask, what do you need? What do you need to be there that isn't there now, especially in a rural community?
I've read about half of all people who commit sexual assault are under the influence of alcohol at the time. And I know that your work involves working with bars and clubs on the Safe Bar training program. Can you tell us about that?
Definitely. So the Safe Bar training program is a really, really great program that we've been really excited to bring, especially to our area in Wisconsin. It teaches active bystander skills for individuals who work at a venue that serves alcohol, but more so it starts a conversation on how do we keep staff safe and how do we keep patrons safe? How do we make this an environment where we don't allow anybody to be hurt? Especially in Wisconsin, where drinking is such a big part of the community culture, it's been really, really great for us to get to go into venues and have them work with us on how to prevent harm from ever happening. Because the truth is that alcohol is not inherently something that causes sexual assault. It's something that people who were going to cause violence to somebody else now don't have inhibitions, so they can use it as an excuse, or they can use it to make somebody vulnerable. And that's a lot about what that training is we're not saying alcohol is the problem. If alcohol was gone tomorrow, it wouldn't solve all of the problems in the world. But we're saying that it's definitely something that we need to keep an eye on and a tool that people can use, that as people who are watching, we can make a safer environment by being aware of those things.
So these training programs, like the Safe Bar programs and the Stand Up, Don't Stand By, Uber created a program as well that, you know, working with bars and clubs, nightclubs, to how to safely intervene in stopping sexual assault before it happens. What do you think about this type of bystander intervention training? How effective is it, and does it work? Have you seen it working?
Definitely, yes. So I think that bystander training works on a couple of different levels. On the first level, whenever you bring a training to a group of people, whether they work at a club or a bar or are driving for Uber, it raises the awareness in that group of people that this happens, and this happens to people that I have seen during the course of my work. Mm-hmm. This happens to people all around me, and this is something that in my job, I am able to perhaps prevent or even just be aware of it. So for that group of people, it's great to start that conversation about also how can you take care of yourself. I think also then when it comes to using skills and intervening, the important thing and the way I really like the way the Safe Bar training kind of talks about it is you have to do something. You don't have to do the perfect thing. So for so long, I think bystander training was you have to be this big confrontational person. You have to go in and you have to yell and cause a scene and you have to immediately tell the person you're wrong, wrong, wrong. But really, it's hard to know. And it's hard to really get that definitive, this is what's happening and I have to do this. So the way the Safe Bar training goes and the way a lot of other trainings now, kind of as we're moving into this new era of bystander intervention, is you don't have to do it that way. Use distraction. Make a joke. We're in the Midwest. Everyone loves a joke and everyone loves to be able to be friendly. So if you can do it in a way that's not something that you can't see yourself doing, it's more important to do something than it is to do what you think might be the quote-unquote perfect thing. In order for the person who might be hurt to feel I'm being watched and someone's taking care of me, in order for the person who might hurt somebody to know I'm being watched and I can't do this, but also for everyone else around to know we're not going to let this happen, and if you're going to be hurt, then we're going to prevent that from happening. And that's been really effective, I've noticed.
Caitlin Wunderlin with us with Bolton Refuge House in Eau Claire, providing outreach and services for people affected by intimate partner violence, by domestic violence, sexual violence. This month is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And how does this affect you? What does this month mean to you? What resources have helped you or a loved one recover from this type of trauma? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Caitlin Wunderlin here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing sexual and relationship violence and efforts to expand resources in rural parts of Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Please be aware this could be a difficult conversation, and take care. President Biden last month reauthorized the Violence Against Women Act. It contains provisions to improve prevention and response to sexual violence and increases funding for services.
This law broke the dam of congressional resistance and cultural resistance. And it brought this hidden epidemic out of the shadows.
How do you think federal dollars earmarked for domestic violence services should be spent in Wisconsin? Forensic nurses, nonprofits, what needs are unmet that would go a long way to assist survivors? 800-642-1234. Caitlin Wunderlin is a mobile sexual assault victim advocate with Bolton Refuge House in Eau Claire with us for about 9 more minutes. Caitlin, we just heard President Biden there on the Violence Against Women Act. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective in Eau Claire, help from the federal government, from grant programs, would your nonprofit need to continue its work?
Definitely. So Bolton Refuge House uses a lot of funding from different sources in order to make as much available for survivors as possible. So something like VAWA, which is really important, the Violence Against Women Act, is very important for us to be able to operate and be able to employ the staff that we employ and continue the services that we've been providing. I think it's really, it's an interesting dynamic, because when we're talking about rural and the services we provide, it can be so important and so focused on community because you know people who are interacting with survivors on a daily basis. You know people because you see them in town or you work with them through work. That community is so important that using these federal funding streams is an interesting way of making community change and then demonstrating that for even state or federal levels, and vice versa, seeing how they're making change and how it's affecting us all the way down to the community level. So it really is a conversation with every person, you know, and sexual assault affects so many people. It really is a conversation with every person.
Oh, that's really interesting, I think, because you see the federal funding, it becomes personal because you see how it is affecting and supporting people who might be in line in front of you at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's really interesting. You know, I'm wondering, with hospitals, what if the person has decided to go to a hospital? They're in a rural area. Are there enough forensic nurse examiners in smaller communities? How far will the survivor need to travel?
That is a great and very important question. So we are incredibly lucky in Eau Claire to have two different hospitals that provide SANE exams, so the forensic exams, and the forensic nurses are very, very lovely here. However, it can be really hard sometimes in, for example, we also work in Buffalo County and Jackson County, which are also very rural counties. And sometimes if a survivor isn't able to meet with a SANE nurse in one of those counties, or in any county, honestly, in Wisconsin that's rural, if those SANE nurses are not working or they're not able to work on multiple SANEs at once, if there's already somebody there, they might have to be driven all the way up to counties, waiting 3 hours in a car in order to get the forensic exam done. Also, the forensic exam itself can be a very, very traumatizing thing. It's something that can make a survivor feel very vulnerable, because you have to be forensically tested, and it's something that's very intimate and very hard, especially after a crime like sexual assault. So having to go even further in order to get your exam done can be a really hard thing, especially when already going in can be such a barrier for so many people who just, I want to be able to take care of myself in the moment. And because a SANE exam, a forensic exam, has to be done within 72 hours for most viable evidence collection, a lot of survivors are just thinking, I need to take care of myself, which is 100% something that they can do, right? They're allowed to take care of themselves and whatever that looks like in that moment for them, and they deserve to take care of themselves in that moment.
There are also expenses, the travel expenses, I would imagine, expenses around the hospital exams. How are those, we've heard President Biden saying that we need those resources to make sure that survivors get justice but are also compensated. Mm-hmm. How do you work around those issues?
Definitely. So in Wisconsin, there are two main funds that would work with getting a sane exam or kind of alleviating some of those costs. One is the SAFE Fund, which is a very, very important fund because the whole point of that fund is that a survivor should never have to pay for their own sane exam. I mean, even that sentence itself, I feel, is very powerful. It's something that I think is, for me, a very optimistic way of thinking as a culture about survivors and how they should not have to do anything. They shouldn't have to pay for a sane exam. They shouldn't have to think about these things because they did nothing wrong, right? They didn't hurt anybody. So why are we putting so much of the burden on survivors, people who have already had to survive the worst thing that can happen to a person that you can survive? So to put that burden off of them, to say, no, this is on us. We're going to pay for this because that you should never have to pay for it, to me, is just a very powerful statement. The other funding stream is there's crime victims compensation, which is another thing in Wisconsin that kind of covers, outside of the exam itself, a lot of the things that might happen as a result of being the victim of a crime. So those two funding streams in Wisconsin are very important for kind of removing some of those barriers for survivors to get what they need, like medical help or counseling help afterwards.
Talking with Caitlin Wunderlin, who is a mobile sexual assault victim advocate at Bolton Refuge House, which is based in Eau Claire, serving several counties in the area. You can join in 800-642-1234. Caitlin, before we move on, in recent years, there has been a backlog of testing sexual assault kits in Wisconsin. Justice Department had revealed that. What is the status of that? Have you heard of any backlog still in place, or is this process moving more smoothly now?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, we recently passed two bills and started a new tracking system for the sexual assault kits. So this is a very an exciting time in some ways, just because it's so much change and so much focus on sexual assault kits and ensuring that they are taken care of and handled and processed. So the new tracking system will have a very anonymous, very nondescript app for survivors and a way for them to track where their kit is at any given moment. So whether they choose to report or not choose to report, which is completely up to them, they do not have to report their crime to law enforcement. If they want to get the kit collected, they still can. So if they choose not to report, then they can see on the app, they can see with their tracking number, okay, my kit is in the crime lab and I have 10 years to decide if I want to get it tested or not. Or my kit is at the hospital, but then it's being transported by law enforcement to the crime lab. Okay, it's been processed, and so now it's going back to law enforcement for them to look at the evidence. So all of these different steps that now have become a lot easier for survivors to track and to know what's going on, which for so many people is very important, especially knowing there is no name on any box. There's nothing that anybody could know and identify, this is Betty Lou's box. Nobody will possibly know that. It is an anonymous tracking number that just the survivor themselves has after a sane exam. So that in Wisconsin has really been an important thing for, again, just recognizing and continuing the conversation of, we need to do right by survivors of sexual violence. We as a community need to do whatever we can to make that a smooth process. And that has really been very, very good in order for getting those kits tested and making sure they're being kept in a good way and in the way that the survivor wants them to be kept.
That transparency and tracking sounds like a real breakthrough. We only have a minute left. What are your visions for the type of services that you can provide, or what do you envision, you know, in the coming years with resources?
Ooh, that's a question I could talk about for hours. But more so than anything, I think, to me, a really, really big success would just be if everybody in the community can realize, I know somebody that has been affected by this, whether I know it or not. And I myself can be a really important piece of the puzzle of being a supportive person for people in my life, for myself, and for preventing sexual violence in the future, that we all have a role.
We all have a role. And Caitlin, thank you so much for sharing your job and the resources. Appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Caitlin Wonderlin is a mobile sexual assault victim advocate at Bolton Refuge House in Eau Claire. Hope you stay with us. Ahead this hour, Wisconsin Conservation Congress's annual survey is underway. The group's chair is going to share how you can influence the state's hunting, fishing, recreational policies. Have you filled out your Wisconsin Conservation Congress questionnaire? How do you feel about conservation issues in Wisconsin? How do you feel about the Congress and how it works? 800-642-1234 to join us. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.